Hey, we're live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchell. How are you doing today, Seth?
I'm good.
All right. All right, let's dive in because we have a ton of news this week, especially about the Cybertruck for some reason. A lot of things came out about the Cybertruck this week. We had an exclusive on Cybertruck hoarders, and then Elon started talking about Cybertruck nonstop. And we might have even more news next week about the Cybertruck because Elon is doing, a review of the entire, with the engineering team responsible for the Cybertruck. And they're going to look at all the specs that they're going for the production version of it. So we're going to have a lot more on that. But he did reveal the biggest change from the prototype that was unveiled last year to the production version. If you've been following the last few months, Elon has talked a lot about some refinement to the design, making the Cybertruck a little bit better for production. And the biggest change to the design is going to be the dimension. So he confirmed it's going to be reduced by about 3%. And they're going to make the center line, which I assume is this line that we see here, is going to make it more level. So right now it goes up a bit. So I assume they're going to make it more like straight parallel to the ground, I assume. And lower the windowsill height. So apparently the window sill is a little bit too high for his liking. So if you look at the actual dimension that we know about the truck, it would go down from 231 inches to 224 on time of line. Of course, that's if it's perfectly proportionally 3% reduced, which I doubt is the case, but let's just make the assumption because that's all we know. The width would go to 77 inches from 79.8, almost 80 inch wide. That's always fun. Like if you have a large truck, like the width is often the issue at the for parking and stuff like that. And the height, he talked about the reducing the height, which is supposed to be 75 inches high. That would go down to 72.8 or 73 inches. And that would be good for fitting the car in the garage. Sometimes the garage is not too high. Though, of course, you don't have a hatch on it. It is a pickup, so that's easier on that front. Pablo Cobarly, I see. I just read your email, man. Yeah, I see that you are in the comment section. And now I'll take a look at your in that article that I just posted earlier today. I asked at the end if we had some Photoshop wizard that want to try to apply those changes to the renderings that we have of the truck. And Pablo was one of the first to comply. Very nice of you, Mr. Pablo. I'll look into it right after the show. But yeah, that was the main thing that he said today. But then he also talked about the dynamic suspension. So he says that the suspension that Tesla is developing for the Cybertruck is not like Tesla just developed a new suspension last year for the Model S and X Raven. With the Raven upgrade, they had the brand new suspension that they developed themselves. Air suspension, I'm talking about. And the Cybertruck is also getting an air suspension. But Tesla says it's a completely different one that they're developing for the car. And he said that they are making changes to it right now, and it's going to be has better travel, more clearance, which he thinks is going to be better for off-roading, of course. And he even hinted that they could kick butt at Baja, meaning that Tesla could get the truck to Baja and test the car, which would be fun.
The fact that he said it means it's happening. I know they're already like setting up that thing to go through Baja. Which means we got to get our drones and we got to go down to Baja.
That would be nice. I'll be up for that. If you look at the Plaid Model S, Elon was like, "Yeah, let's test that thing on the Nürburgring racetrack." And now the Cybertruck doesn't make much sense on Nürburgring, so let's bring it to Baja for the Baja 1000. That can be awesome. If you're not familiar with the Baja race, it's like this giant off-roading race with a bunch of different vehicles that are geared for off-roading. So if you see any kind of picture of like a truck jumping at some kind of dune, that's normally from the Baja race. It's impressive stuff. So it's some kind of test ground also for vehicle that are geared for off-roading. So in this case, the Cybertruck has been marketed as some kind of truck that you can take on adventure, take off-road. So it makes sense to test it there. And Elon just announced the Plaid version of it. So you can imagine a Plaid Cybertruck competing in Baja. I could imagine it kicking butt, as Elon said. And yeah, that's when he said that they're doing, they're reviewing overall system with the vehicle engineering team next week. And he should have the exact number for the clearance of the Cybertruck then. So I hope Elon, after that meeting, is going to get back on Twitter and answer even more questions about the Cybertruck. All right, the other big thing about the Cybertruck is not the Cybertruck itself, but the Cybertruck Gigafactory, which is this central U.S. Factory that Tesla is supposed to announce soon. And Missouri, especially the Joplin area, that raised their hand as like, hey, we want to be considered in the running for the plan. They've been saying that for a while now. Apparently, they submitted a formal application for a formal bid for the factory with Tesla. And they claim $1 billion in incentive for that bid. It includes over 1,000-acre site, which they would sell at a 50% discount to Tesla. So, all right. But the big value here that gets to $1 billion is probably the 100% tax break for 12 years. So,
which is crazy. That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal. When you consider that factory is going to probably worth multi-billion dollars, the taxes on that are significant. So if you have a 12-year break on it, they'll take it.
It's funny to me that there's more than that.
Yeah, the state incentive that would include Missouri work tax credit to provide capital as well as funding to buy equipment, assistance with workforce training, Missouri automotive manufacturing incentive, Missouri build, and state and local sell taxes as part of the package. So very complete package here in terms of incentive for sure. Similar to the one that Tesla had in Nevada 7 years ago now that they closed that deal. But Elon made it clear before that incentive are just part of what he's looking for the Cybertruck Gigafactory. He also wants logistic costs to make sense. He wants access to a large workforce with a wide range of talent and quality of life. So Joplin made an argument for those two. It's Mr. Teeter. What's his name? Is the head of commerce of the Chamber of Commerce there, Toby Teeter. He claimed that it's the trucking capital of the world, Joplin, which I didn't know. I don't know if that's a completely agreed upon thing. Like it's a common knowledge. Like it's the trucking capital of America. So he says that will give somehow Tesla access. But I mean, trucking companies operate everywhere. So I don't know like exactly what's the point there, but okay, sure. But he also said that they can get rail access to the 1,000-acre site. So that I'm sure Tesla, that would be an absolute requirement for them. In terms of the workforce, Teeter claimed that within the 20-mile radius of the site, there's 193,000 people workforce. Which grows by about 100,000 if you go 30 miles, which 30 miles, especially in that area, I assume it's reasonable for a commute, including 150 battery engineers. So Elon didn't confirm that yet, but I would assume that there would be battery production at that site at one point, especially with the Roadrunner project being announced soon, and 500 licensed engineer within the 60-mile radius. So 60 miles, you're starting to be a little bit further out, though.
Yeah.
But like Reno, I mean, I don't know about the same numbers for Reno, but I would assume that it's not that different. Would you agree?
Yeah, Reno's a small town, so you're not going to have a lot of people. I mean, I think it's currently the fastest growing town in part because of the Gigafactory and the sporting companies that propped up around that, as well as Amazon, Google, Apple, all having data centers there. But yeah, wasn't Joplin part of like Huckleberry Finn or something? Like, I feel like there's some historical significance to that place.
It's been a while since I read that, but yeah. I mean, I don't know about how serious Tesla would be considering it, But what I think it's significant, the announcement of that deal is it's a baseline for other markets that are competing for it for sure. So we've heard about Houston, Texas, and Nashville, Tennessee. So now that they know that there's a $1 billion offer on the table, I mean, I'm sure that in terms of workforce, Nashville and Austin are more attractive to Tesla. In terms of quality of life, I don't know, I've never lived in any of those. But I hear Austin is very, very nice. And I've been to Austin once. And
yeah, Austin's awesome. I liked
it. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of cost of living, I'm sure Joplin beats all of them. Also, like, Austin, like, Elon said that it would be for, like, Central U.S., Texas, I think it's technically Central U.S., is it?
Yeah. It's right in the middle.
And one thing I found really interesting he said is that the factory would be also for Model Y production for East Coast demand for the Model Y. And that's surprising to me because, well, first of all, it would put maybe closer to the East Coast, like Nashville would make more sense. But beyond that, it means like, does he think that all the Model Y production in Fremont factory is going to be just for like the West, not just the West Coast, but let's say the West side of the West half of the US and West half of Canada or something?
Maybe.
Like, I thought it was planning like 5,000 cars a week and something like that maybe in Fremont.
They've got some big projections.
That would be more than big production because now you have two factories for Model Y for North American production, for North American demand.
Yeah, but I mean, Fremont also does Model X and Model Y. Sorry, mm-hmm. Model S and Model X and Model 3. So maybe they can't scale up the way they want to scale up there.
Yeah, that could make sense, especially if they want to keep exporting Model 3 vehicles out of Fremont factory, then it would make sense to maybe lower the output of Model Ys and keep the Model 3 higher, especially since they can already produce a lot of Model 3. So like Elon has said multiple times, like, we can upgrade the Model 3 with a bunch of the things that we said that we are making on the Model Y, but it doesn't make much sense right now because it would affect the Model 3 production. And we're capable of making a lot of Model 3s right now. So. But at the same time,
and theoretically, they're going to upgrade the Model S and X like this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to start producing more of those, hopefully.
Yeah, that would be the goal, I assume. Yeah. Finally, breathe some life into the Model S and X program that's been kind of slow lately. But yeah, interesting deal here. Proposal from Joplin, Missouri. The other thing that we want to report on is Cybertruck orders. So I have a few sources in Tesla sales and services. And of course, these people these days are kind of a strange situation. A lot of them are on furlough. A lot of them have pay cuts. Feel for them for that. But some of them, those that are taking pay cuts, are still working despite, of course, them in crashing a lot. So so literally some of them like they don't know what to do. Like they try to get some done in, but it's a weird thing to just try to push cars at those in those difficult times. Also some of them are literally cannot work. Like the delivery team, sometimes they are being Tesla's claim of essential business is not being accepted in every jurisdiction. So sometimes like they're not allowed to do deliveries or even take new orders for cars. So they have to work around that, which is not ideal. But I talked to them in terms of like, what's the kind of flow of orders they're getting in right now? And they say like, it's at a crawl basically for Model 3, Model S and X, and even they're getting a few more Model Y, of course, now that the car is being delivered, people are confirming their orders and whatnot, but it's still not a great pace either. But surprisingly, I had two sources at Tesla that said Cybertruck's order is still coming in like crazy, like hundreds per week in some markets. And some stores are getting them directly, and they're getting like 12 a day or something, like for a single store. So it's everyone is kind of surprised by the sustained demand for the Cybertruck, because of course when Tesla launches a new vehicle, they always get a bunch of orders at first, but then it goes down pretty quickly, and then it's just a trickle until the car actually launches. Not the case for Cybertrucks, apparently. And now we're putting the tallies at over 500,000 easy, maybe closer to 600,000 pre-orders. Of course,
it's only $100 though.
Yeah, yeah. Let's keep that in mind. I mean, the level of commitment is not as great as it is used to for Tesla vehicles. Like the Model 3 was 1,000, Model S and X was, it varied for 2,500 to 5,000 at one point. So yeah, definitely not the same level of commitment. But still, let's say that only like 20% of them commit to the order, which I think is low. I don't think it will reach like 50% or something like that. That would be surprising to me. Like a 50% commitment, like just $100, that would be very good in my opinion. But let's say it's just 20%. That's still 100,000 trucks, which is like billions of dollars worth of Cybertrucks. So, I think it's still an impressive number despite the $100.
Yeah. Now all they need to do is make it.
That's the thing. Like that Cybertruck Gigafactory, they need to announce a location soon, because if they want to stick to that late 2021 timeline, I mean, you got to break ground soon. Another thing that Elon mentioned this week about the Cybertruck is that he made it sound like if you want to get the truck in a different color, you're going to need to have a wrap. So it's something that we speculated on for a while because of the fact that the truck is using this cold rolled steel, stainless steel structure, where it's the frame of the car and the body of the car. It's an exoskeleton system. So the actual finish of the car is steel, which you can't, well, you can paint if you treat it a bunch of things, but no one thought that Tesla was going to paint that truck. It would probably not be ideal for a bunch of reasons. But there was a lot of people that speculated that you could still change the color to a degree with some chemical process to the steel. They called it, I had it here.
Anodized?
Yeah, but there's a bunch of different ways to do it, apparently.
And that's for aluminum, is anodization.
I thought I had it here somewhere. Anyway, there's a bunch of process you can do to change the color of steel. But Elon, when asked, will the Cybertruck have colors? Elon said, you will be able to wrap it in any color or pattern. So at that point, I asked him, like, didn't answer, but will that mean that Tesla will offer the wrap as a service, or would that be a third party? And the fact that he said, you will be able to wrap it, I think it means more like that would be up to the customer, which is fine. I'm sure that Tesla doesn't want to get into the business of wrapping cars. It's can bring some of headaches, but at the same time, wrapping a car is can be pretty expensive, and that's why I like the idea of maybe Tesla getting into it, because they could manufacture the wrap in high volume, like pre-cut for the Cybertruck, and then like optimize the way to install it to reduce the man hours a little bit and whatnot, and reduce the cost of it. But yeah, that may be like hopeful thinking on my part. But maybe the Cybertruck is going to be easier to wrap since it's all straight lines. There's no curvature.
That's a good point. It's very squared.
I mean, I do like the stainless steel look of the prototype. It looks rugged. It looks awesome. But at the same time, like we just said, there's between 500,000 and 600,000 of them out there, orders right now. Like, put that on the road and you see those Cybertrucks everywhere, all the same colors. I think it's going to get a hold pretty quick.
Yeah. Get colored rims, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that Elon said patterns. Like, he's already anticipating, like, plaid, you know, like, different you know, maybe yeah, designer things.
Yeah, people already do it for the other Tesla, so I'm sure it's going to happen for the Cybertruck. Yeah, also, I mean, the Cybertruck is going to be used, I assume, by a lot of people as a work truck. Right. So a lot of people are going to want to wrap it with some kind of logos of their companies or something anyway. Like, you already seen a bunch of trucks on the road today.
Right.
Maybe we put a giant electric logo on ours.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. A logo on the back right here.
Yeah, there's a lot of logo space on that thing.
A lot of real estate for marketing. Yeah. All right, speaking of paint, Elon also said this week that Gigafactory Berlin is going to have the most advanced paint shop in the world. And it's going to result in new colors with more layers of stunning colors. I'm quoting Elon here. That subtly change with curvature. So it sounds like Tesla is working on building a new kind of paint shop that's going to be able to deliver more layers on the car. And the first paint shop to be deployed is going to be the one at Gigafactory Berlin. And sounds like we might have new color options for the Model Y that come with it. He said the Model Y, of course, because that's going to be the first car that they're going to build in Berlin. And he said that it was going to come to Fremont in Shanghai eventually, but that will be upgraded over time because you don't want to retrofit the factories right now since they are producing. Though they could do it right now, really. That would be the perfect time to work on the paint shop in Fremont for sure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I just did a report a few weeks ago about the fact that Tesla is also recommissioning their old paint shop. So there was no mention of that.
Yeah,
and the new kind, but
and frankly, that the paint shop is an area Tesla needs some improvement on. Like one of the big complaints about, especially early Model 3s and Model Ys, is the paint quality.
Yeah, there could always be improvement with that. So let's keep a look on what Tesla does with the paint shop in Berlin and how it ends up being the most advanced if it does. The stopping at traffic light and stop sign is being rolled out to a wider part of the early access program. So like since Tesla did the whole, if you buy FSD early, you get the early access, which is not completely true. A lot of people weren't invited to that, myself included. They sort of made like several level of easy access, early access. So it's, again, it's even less true than it's completely early access because people actually get it before you. But anyway, now a lot more people are doing it and Tesla updated a bit the version of it. It's actually not called stopping at traffic light and stop signs anymore. Tesla now calls it traffic light and stop sign control. Which, okay. But what I found interesting in the update is we got a look at the warning that Tesla pushed when you actually unlock the feature, activate it in your car. So Tesla has that for all the beta feature, like auto steer the first time you activate it or something. You have this warning that comes up. And the warning for this new traffic light and stop sign control feature is pretty strong warning. So I think Tesla is being extremely conservative with the launch of this feature. And I mean, they even say it here, like this feature may be conservative and slow down often at first. So it might be frustrating for some people who activate the feature. And then like, of course, the car is not always going to act the way you act when you do a stop. Like everyone does a stop different. Like in Quebec, we call them the American stop when people don't, they don't completely stop at a stop sign. We call it an American stop.
That's pretty good.
Where you just like come slow down and then whoop, take back off. But to be fair, we people do that in Quebec too, so it's not it's kind of a xenophobic thing to say. But anyway, so depending on how you do your stop, I'm sure a lot of people were like, "Hey, this thing is being way too conservative about the stop." And also, it doesn't do turn. I'll keep that in mind too. So if you're planning to turn at an intersection, the vehicle won't do that, and you need to press the accelerator to start again. It will then go back to your auto steer and traffic aware cruise control setting, whatever they are set up to. But you need to tell the car it can go forward. Really, the way I see this whole release of the feature is just a great tool for Tesla to train their autopilot at intersection. That's what they want to do. They want to get data about how to stop at a specific intersection, where to stop, where, like, sometimes the actual, like, how many times do you stop at the stop line and then you crawl forward a little bit to get a better view of the intersection and to see when you can actually cross. Like, this is, like, extremely common. That's a weird thing for like even for a human to do. Like just the other day, I remember I was at an intersection and I needed to cross in oncoming traffic to cross the street to the other side. And my girlfriend freaked out as I was crawling toward the traffic because she thought I was like driving into traffic, but I wasn't driving into traffic. I was just trying to get closer to get a better view of the traffic coming to see when I can go forward. So like, Newman was freaking out at this because it looked like you're running into traffic. So, oh, there's a computer like handles that. And so yeah, I'm sure Tesla is going to use that as a way to collect a lot of data on that and all the situation. How optimistic are you on this? On this?
Well, first of all, I don't want to stereotype, but my wife thinks I'm going to kill her every time we go out driving. And I don't think I drive too insanely, although I did when I was younger.
Me too.
Maybe. I always ask her, I'm like, I'm, you know, 40 something years old. How do you think I made it here? Like, because like every time I go out, it seems like you think I'm like this close to death. So anyway, that's a digression. Mm. I don't know. I think this is another step in the evolution of the full self-driving. You know, like, people are obviously going to be paying close attention. It's going to learn a little bit. I guess that's where we're at, right? We're mm-hmm. taking these baby steps and getting more and more used to the car doing the driving. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm sure the first couple times it's creeping through a stop sign, my foot's going to be hovering over the brake and I'm going to be, you know, clench the wheel. But, you know, eventually I'll probably trust it. Or sometimes, you know, maybe you're feeling a little gutsy and you can just like, hey, this doesn't feel comfortable, but let's see what it does. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully you don't run into a truck or something.
Yeah, and you know that that's going to happen. There's going to be some accident. Like, there's hundreds of thousands of Teslas out there. Yep. I'm sure a lot of people is going to activate that feature. And like anything, some people is going to push it a little bit too hard. And that's going to... And unfortunately, I think even probably death is going to be inevitable, just like the autopilot deaths were inevitable at some point. But then question, like, people is going to say, oh, it's because of the autopilot again. But of course, the human is at fault. Tesla is concerning you being responsible. So... I always have that in the back of your mind when you're activating those features. You're the one responsible for the car, so always pay attention. I wanted just a little tangent here on the driving visualization with the new FSD update, and especially if you have the hardware 3 computer. Apparently, the visualization are getting a lot better, a lot faster. We had Jacob S. Send us this picture to use, share this picture with us. That's pretty cool, where you can see there, you stop in the road where there was 3 traffic cones in the road and a worker holding a stop sign, and the visualization system plays the cone perfectly in the road, the temporary stop sign in the middle of the road, and even the person. If you look close enough, you see the person behind the stop sign. So I thought that was an impressive demonstration of the system.
That's pretty cool.
All right, moving on. Oh, a new Powerwall feature. So Tesla released a Powerwall feature that to charge your car with the Powerwall during a power outage. So technically, you could already do that. Like, the Powerwall will charge your car during a power outage if the grid is not supplying you any electricity and your car needs charging. But it was sort of doing it as part of the regular load of your home, like the regular electricity load. This new feature basically enables your Powerwall to talk to your Tesla vehicle. So it's only worked with Tesla vehicles for now. It talks to them, and based on the grid state and your home electric load, it will change the charging behavior of your car. So if the grid is on, whatever the load on your car is, the vehicle charge normal. But then we're going to the chart here if you're watching on YouTube, and if you're listening, we'll try to explain it. But if the grid state, there's a power outage with the power wall being above energy threshold, or also getting a surplus of solar, then depending if the home electricity load is low or high, that will reduce. If it's low, the car will charge with the surplus power and energy. If it's high, the vehicle will slow its charging rate to prioritize the ohm load. So that means that your car will never shut down the need oversee the need for power for your home. So whether it's like the fridge and you're doing a load of laundry or whatever it is. And then if there's a power outage and the Powerwall is below its energy threshold, so the minimum energy that it needs to act as backup power, then whatever, if there's a load on your home, the vehicle would completely stop charging. Well, that's an interesting feature. As a Powerwall owner, are you excited to test it out? That means you need a power outage.
Well, I can simulate one with the main just hitting the main the main thing, but yeah, I mean, it's good. I guess the thing you don't want like the power to go out and then your car just to drain your power walls.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key thing, I guess. And, you know, that makes sense clearly. Mm-hmm. What might be better is if you could take the power out of your car in a power outage instead of just having it freeze. And we've talked about that ad nauseum before. And it doesn't sound like Tesla's in a huge hurry to let you pull power from the vehicle just yet.
No.
But this is great. Like it's kind of like a bit of a difficult solution to a, you know, very kind of edge case problem. You know, theoretically you're at home when your power goes out because your car's at home and you could just go outside and unplug it. But you know, this makes it easier. And you know, if you're maybe, you know, out on a bike ride or something, then you don't have to worry about your power walls being dead when you return to the power outage house. And we've been having outages here. We had a 25-minute outage that we didn't even know about, like 2 weeks ago, not even a week ago. And, you know, our friends are like, hey, did you have a power outage? And we're like, no, we didn't. And then I looked at the app and it said, yeah, there was a 25-minute outage. So those are kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we have the switch over and everything.
Yeah. How many power walls do you have on your own?
Two power walls and tons of solar. So yeah. Theoretically, we could go, as long as we're not crazy with our electricity, yeah, we could go forever. And now that we're not driving anywhere, we have a huge surplus of solar.
Yeah, that too. So that's 28 kilowatt hour capacity. And do you know the average consumption of your household?
Well, it varies quite a bit depending on what we're doing. But our house idles. Like if we turn, you know, nothing big is happening, our house idles at under a kilowatt. We have, you know, all LED lights and we're pretty energy efficient. So I had four power walls to kind of work with.
Mm-hmm.
And it made sense to only have two here. And then we put two in our ski place in Vermont, our condo up there, because we really didn't need three power walls here. As long as the solar was going, because two power walls could keep us going for a 24-hour period, and you know theoretically there's going to be sun.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and in Vermont, are you also with like the power walls? Are they? Is it with the Green Mountain?
Yeah, so that's a different story in Vermont. In Vermont, we have it so that there's a time of use change in Vermont during high usage periods, they charge like triple the amount. So all the electricity in the house comes from the power walls during those high usage periods. And then during the low usage periods or the low cost periods, those power walls charge up. So almost every night, the power walls are charging and discharging. So, you know, I'm a little bit worried about like the long-term effect of that. But in the short term, we're saving quite a bit of money on heat because it's an electric heated place. We save quite a bit of money, just, you know, like hundreds of dollars a month because we're using stored energy from the low period to the high period. Now, Vermont, Green Mountain Power, the utility up there, has a program where you can bring your own power wall. They use it as a meter. So Vermont or Green Mountain Power actually connects to it as your meter, and they kind of control when the power wall comes off and on. Mm-hmm. But in exchange for that, they give you way reduced rates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty good deal, and they don't have to do a meter. It it's kind of good for everybody. I think it. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the wave of the future.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other utilities I think are looking into using the Powerwall as a meter, like on pilot programs.
Yeah, because meters are expensive. They're like $1,000 mm-hmm. each.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the new fancy ones with the internet connection and the you know, going backwards and all that stuff. And a Powerwall's got that built in, and obviously it's a huge battery.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a few more stories to get to. If you guys have questions, put them in the comment section, and we'll get to them after we finish the stories, but just so we have a little backlog of them. All right, next story is still about Tesla. The Zoox lawsuit, I don't know if you remember that. Tesla filed that last year. Zoox is the Zoox, whatever, Z-O-O-X. And self-driving startup was secretive for a long time. Apparently, they're working on building a full electric vehicle themselves and having their self-driving technology on top of it. Tesla sued them last year for stealing trade secret. Since it's a self-driving startup, you would assume that it's a trade secret relating to Tesla's self-driving effort. But no, it's about the logistic and warehouse management system. Tesla apparently has some very good trade secrets when it comes to managing warehouses. So they had four employees. Tesla sued them because Zoox hired four employees from Tesla's logistic group, and they claimed that those employees sent themselves like trade secret documents about their effort to personal emails and then brought that to Zoox. So that was claimed in the lawsuit. And if you look at the lawsuit we posted last year, Tesla had some very good proof of that. Like at one point, one of the employee sent himself an email with the documents, and the only text in the email was "you sly dog you," and the other one just sent him to himself with the subject line, "some good stuff there, good stuff." So yeah, not really subtle for the people. So what happened this week is that they reached an actual settlement with Zoox. So Zoox is gonna pay a monetary payment to Tesla, undisclosed amount, and it will undergo an audit of its system to ensure that Zoox employees have not retained or using any Tesla confidential information. And they basically acknowledge that yes, those four employees were in possession of Tesla documents when they joined Zoox, though they don't say that it was a effort by Zoox themselves. It's kind of weird that four of them did it. Like, I don't know what's the thought process in there. Like, really, like, do you like leave your job and like, oh, let's steal information from them and bring to the other job? But at the same time, I have trouble like getting behind that thought process, but also have trouble getting behind like a legit company like Zoox, was like worth like billions of dollars apparently, going like, let's hire those guys if they steal document from Tesla. Like, kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like the whole Silicon Valley espionage thing is rough, because there's so many people moving around, so many like once somebody leaves, they've got all the stuff in their brain. Like,
that's why you hire them. That's fine, right? But like sending a document saying, "Oh, you sly ugly,"
yeah, I know.
You know you're doing something wrong then if you do that, like. All right, Lucid shared some pictures of their EV factory in Arizona. I mean, as I wrote in the article, there's not a lot more things that are electric that excite us more than just new electric vehicle production capacity being deployed. And for a while, we joked about Lucid like just moving dirt around on their site in Arizona. Now it's actually starting to look like something there. Like, they have a full building, main building, and they're completing a second one, pretty large building in the back too. We're not seeing any pictures from inside the building, to be fair. That's that you need some production equipment to make cars. But Lucid says that they're still in a process of they were already well undergoing the process of tooling and machinery equipment buying before the whole coronavirus pandemic. So they're still confident about their goal, but I wouldn't be too surprised if it slides into next year of the start of production.
Yeah, and I will say I have heard anecdotally from a couple of people that Lucid is actually one of the hottest players in the Valley, well, wherever, right now. And a lot of former Tesla, Waymo, A lot of folks from all over are heading to Lucid. I guess they have the funding and kind of some momentum right now. For a while there, they were kind of out of favor, but it seems like they're kind of coming back.
Well, they really like the early Tesla. Like now Tesla is Elon has been good at like keeping like some kind of startup mentality around it. But I mean, it has become a huge company. Lucid, like talking to Peter Rollison, the CEO, it was really reminiscent of like the early days of Tesla. Like we just want to make like the best car that we can make, and making the best car I can make is you need to be electric to do that. So that's an exciting thing to work on. So some engineers like that's just what they want to do right now. Like I want to participate in making the best car possible. Of course, that's what Tesla also aims to do every time, but they aims to do that. Now they have a lot more responsibility around it. Like it needs to sell high volume and everything. While for Lucid, they're gonna be making $100,000 plus car. It's like it's really like the making of the Model S, really. But if you can do it from scratch again, all right. The Taycan 4S is hitting the U.S. dealerships. So Porsche made an announcement earlier today that the new version, the less expensive version of the Taycan, the 4S. So you have the Turbo, Turbo S, and the 4S. We have the pricing difference here. The 4S starts at just about $100,000. So it's still expensive, but significantly less than the Turbo. Starting this weekend, you're going to have some in dealerships. Of course, they already had a decent backlog of orders for that, but you're probably going to find some cars in inventory in the next, maybe in the next few weeks.
Yeah, go on a test ride. Those are fun. I mean, obviously, not with the COVID-19, but maybe they let you take one for a ride or something if you're interested. I would say, like, you know, I'm kind of a cheap bastard, but like, I really like the 4S for $100,000. Like, I mean, seriously, like, you're getting a slightly slower vehicle, and you're getting most of the other stuff, and you're getting, you know, basically the same car with a smaller engine, a little bit smaller battery pack.
Well, you have the other version of the 4S that you actually have more range, though. And this one starts like 109,000.
They sent us a really bad.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It looks like 109,000. Let me. Oh, I can zoom in like this. All right, 109,000. Yeah. So that one you get actually the longest range of any.
Yeah, and the range is very conservative. You know, the EPA was very low at around 200 something, but. You know, it sounds like if you drive conservatively, you can get quite a bit of range on that thing. By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed, I put the background. Our friend
Pablo. Oh, it's a Cybertruck.
Yeah, check your email. He sent us an electric Cybertruck, which I think is going to be our new homepage, basically.
yeah, I might post that page. I'll take a look and see if we can post a comparison with the original picture.
Yeah.
That could be cool if people get an idea of what the production version might look like compared to the prototype. It should look pretty close, too. I mean, but those tiny little changes sometimes, especially the center line thing, that could make a big difference.
But it's not going to be anything like that April Fool's post where...
No.
So.
No, certainly not. All right, that was our biggest article of the week for some reason. Ford files a trademark for EV charging network with the dumbest name. Yeah. Some people took offense at me calling the dumbest name, but please, Fastor Charge. Fastor, F-A-S-T-O-R, Charge. So we've been hammering Ford a little bit on their charging infrastructure effort. We're quite excited about the Mach-E. We're going to be a very interesting vehicle. Of course, the Ford F-150, that's what I'm really excited about because it's the biggest, the F-150 is the biggest vehicle in the U.S. So if they nail the electric version, then that's going to bode well for the EV adoption in the U.S. So that I'm really excited about. But what we learned as EV owners for a long time, the charging experience is it's a big bottleneck in EV adoption. You need to nail that. And Ford's approach has been the boilerplate approach for all the OEMs except from Tesla, where they partner with Electrify America, partner with Ionity in Europe. Those are the third-party charging network, which are improving a lot, to be fair. So I'm sure that one day that would be a sufficient solution. But right now, it's a little bit harder sell to make. But now we see this Ford applying for a trademark, and the trademark is for charging station services for electric vehicle, battery charging services, and vehicle service stations. So that kind of sounds like a charging network, like their own like brand name charging network. It's just that the brand name is Faster Charge, which is ridiculous. But all right, let's move past that. The actual prospect of Ford having its own like supercharger network, that would be exciting. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but we posted when we saw the level 2 station that Ford plans to deploy at their dealership. That looks strikingly similar to the Tesla supercharger. I posted an article about it.
It looks worse in almost every way.
It looks worse, but it's clearly inspired by it to a degree. I took a stab at Ford. I was like, that's not what you need to copy about the Tesla supercharger. No one cares about what. No one cares. Some people do care, but the design is not what's important. It's the business model behind the supercharger that's important. That's a big part of Tesla's success. That's what they need to copy. So maybe that faster charge is that copy of the supercharger, which that I wouldn't mind. But like the design of their station, they copied it with a bad name, a worse name or a worse version of it. I don't know. I was pretty optimistic about Ford, but it's an easy effort. But now with the COVID crisis, I don't know anymore. Like, how good they're going to be able to survive in this. Things are going to be a lot more difficult for automakers.
Yeah. It's going to kind of weed out some of the ones that are having some issues. Mm-hmm. FCA comes to mind. Ford, I mean, they have some winners with the F-150 and the theoretically the Mustang Mach-E should be. I mean, they're selling.
Yeah, I'm confident in the Mach-E. Yeah.
So I don't know if they.
But they need more. And the F-150, we don't know a lot about the specs, of course. But I'm sure, especially if they're working with Rivian and things like that. And also now that Tesla like released unveil the Cybertruck and everything, like you know what you need to deliver in terms of specs and pricing to have like something competitive too. So I'm sure it's going to be in the ballpark of competitive at least. But it's more like you need to produce it in high volume to get that kind of price that Tesla has. And are they ready to do that? Are they really willing to do that? Because we heard some things from GM after the whole launch thing that they did this whole EV day. That's like, oh, wow, like 10 different vehicles and everything. And then when you hear about the volume for, what was it, 2025?
Yep.
That was ridiculously low, like 400,000, something like that.
Yeah, it was less than Tesla's last year.
Yeah, between like 10 different models of cars that they plan to have, electric cars that they plan to have by then. So it was very discouraging. So I hope that Ford is looking at that and like, no, we want to do like the F-150 electric is going to be like a high volume program. At least that's what we hope. All right. Should we take some questions?
Yeah. So Pedro Salazar, at the beginning said, would love to know your opinion about what Tesla's main advantages on solar panels, not tiles, considering their main competitors. Thanks. I'll just jump in here. Solar panels are kind of a commodity for the most part. I do think, the Panasonic panels that were coming out of the Gigafactory in New York were kind of on the high end. They had, more watts rating per inch or centimeter or whatever, and the warranty was I think 25 years, which is above the industry average. But for the most part, solar panels are not roof tiles, panels are a commodity. Yeah, and you can kind of go from longer warranties, higher density, cheaper price, all the these things, and the kind of the market decides what they are. We went with LG panels on my roof. just because they were available at a low cost per watt, and they were also very densely powered at the time, which is like 5 years ago. So, I mean, I have no allegiance to LG, but they just seem to have the right product at the right time for us.
Mm-hmm.
All
right. Yeah, I agree, man. But to answer the actual mm-hmm. question of like what main advantage that Tesla has with the solar panels, because that's the point, because they are a commodity, I think the brand name is probably the fact that, okay, you have a Tesla system on your roof. But like you just said, though, the Tesla system is actually like other people's panels. So I think the interface is one that's going to be an advantage too. I think people like the Tesla app and interface, especially if you had a Powerwall to it. The people like to have that. And then the subscription. I think financially, like if you have the money right now, or if you have good credit, you're probably better off owning the system and maybe like with small interest loan or something. Low interest loan. But in terms of like lowest cost possible of just starting to use solar power, their subscription program are interesting for sure. Because like $100, if let's say you currently have $150 per month of electricity, you can get that down to $100 per. You can just replace that basically by $100 per month of Tesla subscription solar. So that's a great deal for anyone. You just don't own the panels that's on your roof, so that's not ideal. But yeah, we recommend to get multiple quotes though from your local installers, because you'd be surprised what's around you, and there's a lot of competition in that market. So maybe you can get a good deal from a local supplier.
Yep, and we have a new official Electrek artist, Pablo Gubarle, who sent us an email with the Cybertruck modified as per Elon's comments, and we did get it. We got your subsequent email. And that's now our background. And I don't know, can you bring that up on your screen?
No.
Can you drop that from your email to your browser on your computer?
Yeah, but my share screen is for a specific tab on the browser, so that's going to open another tab, so that won't work.
Okay.
I said we can end the share screen, but that's, our face is going to cover the trunk.
Yeah. All right, we'll figure it out.
Well, I'll probably post it on the Electrek if once I take a look anyway.
Yeah, or we're going to redesign the site around that image. All right. Beach Crow says, if just one out of eight buyers, 12.5%, decide they can no longer afford full self-driving, Tesla will be losing money with a $1,000 increase. Not a good move at this point. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, because like they already bought it. Like, are you talking about new buyers? Like, Tesla is not getting any new buyers right now anyway. So whether they take FSD or not, that doesn't change anything. But I don't think they can get a reimbursement on their FSD. Like, that's not. People have tried that before. And I don't think that works.
Yeah. All right. Greg Appelt says, with EPA rollback on mileage and emissions, and it possibly incentivizing OEMs to continue to make ICE versus BEV, will this continue to help Tesla's increase its market share and accelerate its growth? I think that's what Wall Street thinks. I think that makes a lot of sense, because, you know, the knee-jerk reaction of GM and Ford is like, we want to make gas cars. And now that the EPA rolls back their things, GM's like, all right, good, we're going to make more gas cars.
We had the good news this week of like some additional states going with the ZEV mandate of California.
Yeah, which state was that?
Colorado, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like not giant states, of course, but still.
Yes, not bad. And obviously the more the merrier. What's kind of happening in the U.S. is like with our federal government being a circus right now, it seems like the states are kind of taking over a lot of the things that the federal government used to do. I'm not really a states' rights kind of person, but it seems like in this particular case, California's setting a good example. I don't know. What do you think?
When there's there's no federal leadership would be useful, because electric vehicle adoption has been associated a lot with the a federal program, really, that the federal tax credit on electric vehicles has been extremely useful. So it would be nice to see continuity on that front. But yeah, at the same time, yeah, you have to look at California. You're trying to show the pickup truck.
I'm trying to get it going real quick.
No, it's not going to work. Yeah, so I agree. California has, for a long time, been a leader in the U.S. for EV adoption, and that's been because of this EV program, though I still think it's way too lax for, like, I want it to be way more aggressive. But it's better than nothing. We'll take it.
Yep. All right. Rather Be Surfing 7 says, Gigafactory 3 is making 3,000 Model 3s a week. How difficult would it be to ramp up to 4 or 5 or 6K per week? I bet they could do this by year's end.
Normally I would say yes, but now I'm not so sure about how. My understanding was that Gigafactory Shanghai was at least somewhat dependent on production from Gigafactory 1 and even some Fremont production too. So I'm not exactly clear of how it's affecting the current production and the ramp. My understanding is this: yes, they have right now the capacity for 3,000 a week. I'm not sure if they are producing that though. So something to keep in mind.
All right, moving to wrap. The wrap on the model or on the Cybertruck. Most of the cost of the wrap is due to the extensive labor. You'll be able to get your Cybertruck wrap for probably $2,000. Many will just do it themselves, especially with pre-cuts. It would be quite easy. That would be cool.
Yeah.
And I guess
apparently it's quite like a job to like I know two people that wrap their car themselves. And one of them like redid it three times, and the other one like twice.
You need like a heat gun and like melting stuff.
You need some patience and some skills to degree some.
Yeah, I've seen some YouTube videos. I don't think I'd want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Kobe K says, if I ordered a Model Y long range in very early March, do you have any idea when I will get mine? Seth, when did you order yours, and have you heard from them yet? I ordered mine when they announced it. I got white interior, which I think might have been a mistake if I wanted it early. Mm-hmm. And mine's kind of just sitting in the queue right now, so I don't know when I'll get it. Nobody's obviously contacted me, so I think it's kind of a crapshoot. If you live in California, you have a better chance, obviously, of getting one early than elsewhere, but you know, with everything kind of wacky right now, and the factory closed, nobody.
Yeah, they don't produce any right now, so there's no way to tell, really.
Yeah,
let's see if they start back production on May 4th, and from there, I'm sure they're gonna still have probably a backlog to go through.
Yeah,
though they're getting cancellation. I just looked this morning at my referrals, and I haven't looked for a while, and I had a lot of cancellation for last month.
Oh, really?
Earlier this month, last month, yeah.
Interesting. All right. When will Tesla announce the location of the Gigafactory for Cybertruck? Hopefully tomorrow. Like, soon.
Literally.
Yeah. And then, what is Giga China's output as of now? Do you think Tesla continue to get almost 110,000 sales per month? Or is China just the end of the quarter push? Sounds like China's going to be a good source of cars for a little while. I mean, they did have an outage with the COVID. And so there might be some pent-up demand. And there's pent-up demand because, you know, they just started making relatively recently the Model 3 in China. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
Apparently, that new long-range rear-wheel drive Model 3 is popular with the in the Chinese market right now. They are very interested in that car at that price point. So, yeah, if they can produce that in volume right now, I'm sure there's no problem with maintaining that 10,000 a month sell rate. If, again, like I said, the production in China is not too much affected by supply chain issue from other location like Gigafactory 1 Fremont.
All right, this is an interesting one. Tulio Di Medio says, I would love to see kite-powered charging for the Cybertruck, either tethered to the motor generator in regen mode or as a generator in the kite itself. I don't know if it would be practical, however. That's a big caveat at the end. Kites are practical for boats and kite surfers. I don't know that a kite on a Cybertruck would be super practical. What do you think, Fred?
I mean, what happens when you stop?
Yeah, I don't know. there was this Google bought this company that had like a kite generator. I guess if you stop and you throw that thing up in the air, you could get some energy. But I don't think it's a priority.
Yeah.
All right. Anthony Carroll says Ford partnered with VW and others on Ionity Network in Europe. Would it make sense for Ford to buy into Electrify America? What other auto companies would invest in EA? Well, we know Volkswagen certainly.
Well, you don't have to take an investment because Volkswagen was forced to pour like almost $2 billion into the company, or really $2 billion, really. So I don't think they are looking for investment right now. I think Volkswagen is like, yep, we'll take our punishment on that one. Like, that was the best punishment they could give them. That made them probably the difference why they were so committed after the Dieselgate to electric vehicles. They're like, look, they're forcing us to put $2 billion in that business anyway. So let's go all in on electric vehicles. So that made so much sense, I think, for them. Apparently, there's some kind of Chinese wall between Volkswagen and EA, so they do make deals with other automakers, and apparently it can be a good deal. Though you have to make a deal with them, though, if you just go with their regular subscription program. Well, if you buy into a subscription program, it's not too bad. But if you just don't have a subscription with them, or your vehicle OEM doesn't have one, if you just go at the station and charge, and then the rates are not kind on you.
Yeah. I think Kia and Hyundai have some deals with Electrify America where they, I don't know if they invested, but I know that they have a special rate for their.
Yeah, I think it's just special rate. I don't think it's investment.
And Porsche, which of course is part of VW, has special deals, obviously. All right. So we have a chain from Germano from Germany. Last year, Tesla employees were reallocated to help getting the Model 3 delivered. I wonder if Tesla is doing something similar right now. So many Tesla factory workers are sitting at home. Would make a lot of sense to let these people help out their FSD team colleagues by working at home and their computer mapping diverse objects, etc. It's super important to reach FSD as soon as possible.
That could be interesting.
Each financial implications make sense to me that after quarantine time, everybody's surprised how far FSD has come in the late summer. That's my theory. What's your take on this?
Yeah. Very interesting. Like that. I mean, I don't know like how Tesla would be willing to do that. But yeah, I mean, if it would be expensive to keep those people working when normally they have like they are like a money generating by producing cars. But yeah, I don't think it's gonna happen now because Tesla probably just focus on like let's get back into production on May 4th, and they probably would have to create some kind of like training program for that for people to get those labeling properly. If there's a quick turnaround around it, that would be awesome. I think you're right. That would be like a great opportunity to just put like 1,000 people on this real quick for a few weeks and greatly improve Autopilot or FSD. But at the same time, I think Tesla is working on some auto labeling capability. So they're not going to need that. We'll see.
All right. SAI, Model Y, Fremont, China, Berlin, East Coast. What will be the volume? Fred, what's the volume?
Volume of Model Y across all of it. It's going to be a million a year, if you believe Elon Musk.
Volume 11.
Yeah, 11. I mean, that's not impossible, a million per year, but it's hopeful.
Yeah, as long as everything, all the things go right, millionaire. All right, let's see Pablo's render. Yeah, we'll get it to you. Greg Lindstrom says, "Do you think the older OEMs will have build a painless truck in order to compete with the Cybertruck?" I don't know.
Nope. No way. Because it's like you're asking them to go to a completely different powertrain, and then you're asking them, you know, like the only thing you have an expertise of is the powertrain and building the actual truck, the body and assembly of it. That's the two main expertise. And now you tell them those two are useless now. You have to change the whole thing to an exoskeleton system and an electric powertrain. It's like you slap them in the face and then you kick them in the balls.
Insult to injury. Gook Wapanzi says, hi guys, how long do you think the Giga Berlin will be delayed due to the new issue with the sandy soil and foundation redesign that is needed and needs to be approved?
It looks like Tesla has been working quite smoothly with the German government on that front. So I would think they would expedite things. So I'm not too worried about that.
Anthony Carroll says, crazy deals on EVs, Jaguar is now offering 0% interest for 72 months. Kia dealer says $219 a month lease for $3,000 due at signing. For Niro EV, those all sound good. We have a best places to get good deals on EVs at the top of Electrek under autos. First menu item. If you guys are looking for a EV, I suggest going there. Tons of good deals on just about every EV in the U.S., and there might be some more news on that coming up. Stay tuned for that. Johnny B says, many states want to adopt the California standard. It will be tough for ICE manufacturers to comply with multiple standards. I would argue to Johnny B that why not just beat the standards, make it a lot of EVs, make compelling EVs, and just embrace the future. John Barbagallo says, best charging networks in the U.S. besides Tesla's, recommended adapters and extension cords?
Probably EA.
EAs are typically very fast. There's more than six or more chargers at each spot. They're usually located at good spots. You know, outside of Tesla, I think EAs, hands down, the best. The others are Green Lots. EVgo, ChargePoint has some stuff. The state of New York actually has some interesting things coming up where they're going to start putting their own, like, New York Power Authority all over the state of New York. So that'll be nice. And they're inexpensive. But, you know, as far as the U.S. goes, I think Electrify America is your best bet. SAI, Europe Model Y will be made in Berlin. That's true. Rather be surfing. Seven, did you see Sandy Monroe's video showing that no wiring length improvements on the Model Y versus the Model 3? What do you think of this?
We did see that. We did report on it. That's the one with the whiskey bottle.
I think Sandy was having a great Easter.
It was a weird episode of the teardown. It looks like he's right about that, though. Tesla didn't made that much of an improvement to wiring, especially not to the length of the wiring for the Model Y. But there was a bunch of other improvement, though. But that's not why the episode was weird. It was weird for whiskey bottle and also him making several comments that didn't make sense, including on the length of the wiring. When he said that Tesla was aiming for 700 millimeters of wiring, and I think that's that would defy the laws of physics there.
Right. You know what's kind of interesting is he did mention that to get to like the smaller wiring, they would have to go to a 48-volt system.
He said 42-volt, actually.
42-volt.
Maybe. Probably meant 48-volt, yeah.
Yeah. The whiskey was talking. But,
the booze was talking.
Yeah, so by upping the voltage, you can, you know, get smaller wires throughout.
Tesla has talked about that, right?
Yeah, so Tesla has talked about that. Maybe we'll see something like that in upcoming versions of cars or Cybertruck or something. All right, that's all the questions.
All right, so thanks for joining us this week on the latest episode of the Electrek Podcast. And we're going to be here same times next week, same place, same time. You can give us a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. You can give us a subscribe. We have a bunch of things coming up on YouTube soon, including my next episode of the Model X high mileage series. And if you're listening on your podcast app, you can give us a review. That always helps too. And we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.